into the life history of Angleites here, and that will be Tania Morelli. In a way, this will be like a memoir. If any other Wranglites feel like they have a story they would like to share, please feel free and reach out to KSDK for a future Talk on the Rock. You can call in to ask a question. The number to KSDK is 874-2345. Hi, Tania. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for coming in. And yeah. Lindsay, your wife is here with us too.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
As you know, just a backstory, I was hanging out with Lindsay the other day on her birthday. Happy birthday again.
Thank you.
And she told me some really interesting things about your life history. So thanks for coming in here to continue this conversation about it and for people to hear about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about your early life. I believe it started long before you were born with, of course, your parents. Will you give a brief intro to who your parents were back in the day and what their names are?
My mom, Shirley, was born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia. And my dad, Bruce, was born and raised in Santa Barbara, California. Both grew up in the cities. And in, I believe it was about 1974, my mom moved from Atlanta, Georgia out to California. And she was on vacation with her fiance at the time, actually, up on the Olympic Peninsula. And my dad had recently gone up there to work with his younger brother, Fallen Timber. And they were camped out in a campground, and they ended up being right next to each other. And over the course of a couple of weeks, everybody kind of got to know each other. And apparently they got to know each other a little more than what my mom's fiance knew. And at the end of that couple of weeks, my mom told her fiance he could go back to California without her. And so that was the start of it. And so they ended up going back to California at the end of that summer. And my dad had grown up there, and he just was kind of tired of the politics and what was happening. And so he asked my mom if she wanted to go on a crazy adventure. And he, for some reason, had a donkey boarded out on a branch in the Santa Barbara Hills. And he spent a lot of time up there in the summers fishing with his dad and my grandfather. And so they packed up, and they had an old Willie's Jeep. They parked outside a bar and left the title in it, signed with a note that said it's stuck in third gear. You can have it, whoever finds it. And they packed that donkey up and walked from Southern California up the Pacific Crest Trail to Central Oregon. They ended up in the Cascades and then crossed Oregon, out through Central Oregon and up into Idaho. This whole journey took them about 5 years. They worked on backcountry ranches. My older brother was born in Council, Idaho, a little clinic there. And I was born in October 1980, at a place called Bergdorf Hot Springs. That's where my birth certificate is signed. I actually was born in a little cabin just down the road from there. And so at the time, my dad was trapping fur in the wintertime, so he would go into the mountains and spend the winters, and we lived in a little cabin we built up in the middle of nowhere, and there was no roads. We hiked in, packed everything in, spent the winter trapping, and then we'd come out in the spring. But it was just a totally different way of life. We were completely cut off from all technology. You know, we didn't have a vehicle. We had, I think at the time, 3 donkeys. And in the wintertime, we'd board them out at Bergdorf. And so,
wow. Yeah. How old were your parents, like, during this time span?
My dad was 26, 27. My mom, she was 21 when they met. So I think they were about 5 years apart. So, yeah, they were in their early to mid-20s during this time.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. Yeah, and I don't think most people have that experience as well.
Yeah, it was very, very unique.
Yeah, so they were ranching and, as you said, trapping too. And
yeah, trapping in the wintertime, but in the summers they'd work on backcountry ranches. There's a lot of dude ranches down there that people would fly in, and my dad was usually a wrangler on those ranches. And there's lots of great stories about people they met, and just an incredible adventure for my folks. And so and then during that time at Bergdorf, there was a lady by the name of Carol King, who most people have probably heard of, that was actually interested in buying the hot springs there. Now, Bergdorf is still an original encampment, basically, from the wagon era that came through there, and they have not changed. It's a hot springs. All the pools are still original, and Carol King wanted to turn it into kind of a dude ranch, and the owners of it never wanted to sell, but she would still spend a lot of time there, and so my family became good friends with her during that time, and my dad was actually working for her part-time, kind of taking care of her and showing her around, and Carol King was actually not the first, but one of the first people to hold me as a baby, and she was at my birth, and so I'm...
So, was there a midwife, or do you know?
Yeah, there was a midwife, okay. Yes.
And then Carol King.
And Carol King.
And yeah. Your parents.
And my parents, yes.
Your parents weren't there.
Unfortunately.
That's pretty amazing. And yeah. And you did reach out to Carol King about 10 years ago.
Yeah, 10 years ago. I was in the music industry for a long time, and so I was able to make some connections, and she had reached out to me later on and said that she remembers my folks well and the donkeys and those times. She still has a place down in Sun Valley, I believe, so she's still kind of connected to the Idaho area.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything? Like, do you remember that time in your life? I know you were young.
Not really. Maybe moments. I guess we left for Alaska when I was 2. So there's not a lot of memories until I got here in 1982.
Was that a similar trip adventure, you know, that your parents took, from California to Idaho, and then similar, Idaho to Alaska?
A little bit different at that point in time. They'd come out of the wilderness from trapping in the spring of 1982, and the fur prices had dropped tremendously. And so my dad was always off to the next adventure. We never sat still very long when I was a kid. Fur prices had dropped, and we ended up here, just kind of on a whim, my dad going on the next great adventure. He ended up asking my mom if she wanted to head to Alaska. He knew somebody up here. And so they packed up everything they had and got on the ferry in Bellingham. And we ended up here in the spring of 1982. And as the story goes, we were living in City Park under a tarp. And I think we ended up showing up here with $20, my dad said, is all he had in his wallet when they got here. And so.
And then what?
We started asking around, and a fellow by the name of Neil Soderbergh here, who my dad was still good friends with over the years, he kind of took us in and gave us a little bit of help. And he knew a guy by the name of Robin Larson who had an oyster farm down at Three Way Pass, which is on the southern end of Etlin Island. And ended up getting a job. My folks worked running that oyster farm for a few years down there.
So you all lived over at the oyster farm?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. All right. And then from Etlin Island, then where did you go?
So we were on Etlin. We did the oyster farm, which was extremely remote. My mom told me she spent 9 months one time without seeing anybody else but our immediate family. She started to get cabin fever, I think. She had at the time 3 boys, 2 of us, you know, in diapers and cloth diapers at that. Just, it was really hard on her. We ended up moving over to Burnett Inlet Fish Hatchery in 84 or 85, I believe. My dad ran that place for a few years, and then things kind of fell out down there. And we ended up moving to Haines for a couple of years after that.
And how old were you about, during that time?
I was between the ages of 2 and 6, I guess, when we headed up to Haines.
What do you remember?
Oh, a lot of time on the water with my dad. He was always out fishing. If we weren't, oyster farming, we were getting it started, so there wasn't a whole lot of, day-to-day stuff. You just let them grow, from what I remember. Just a lot of time playing in the woods. I remember most of my memories started happening that I can really recall were over at Burnett, swimming in the fish pens with the salmon. My brother was always antagonizing me, getting me to get into some trouble that I probably shouldn't have been in. So we had a lot of fun. We didn't really know anybody else existed when we were kids. It was just our family and very little interaction, and we were homeschooled most of the time. So we were painfully awkward probably up until later in life.
And then, well, when you went to Haynes, were there more people around? Or
no, that was the plan. My mom had said, I want to move to a bigger town, and we did, but he moved us about 30 miles out Mosquito Lake Road into a little cabin in the middle of nowhere, and it was kind of the same situation. So by, I think, 1987, my mom had probably had enough, so we moved back down to Washington.
Okay. Okay. So you moved to Washington for how long? Because you all ended up in Wrangell eventually, right?
Well, I moved back here in 2013.
Okay.
But my family moved back to Washington, and then we were in Oregon for a while, and then back up to Northeast Washington. But my goal from the time I was about 8 years old was to move to Alaska and become a fishing guide. And so I finally pursued that later on in life, and I moved here in 2013.
Cool.
But the story of how I got back here was kind of interesting as well.
Tell us.
Well, let's see. How does this go? So I started playing music in high school kind of by accident. I actually was signed up for shop class, and this was in ninth grade, and they told me it was full so I could take home ec or music. And so my dad used to play a little bit, and he had an old guitar, and I really wanted to play piano, but we didn't have one at the time. And we were still pretty poor at that point in life. And so any extracurricular activities were, you know, cut short most of the time by my dad saying we couldn't afford to do it. But we had an old guitar, and so I started picking up the music, and I just worked hard at it. That's pretty much I base everything on is my work ethic in life. And it took me some pretty cool places. I spent 10 years on the road touring, working with a country show band, did a little stint over in Europe, was in Nashville for a while, was with a band that was signed to Warner Brothers Records. And so in 2008, I believe, we hired a new bass player, and his name was Dan Powers. And so we're on the road on the tour bus heading through Montana, and I asked him where he was from, and he said, well, I'm from Alaska. And I said, well, where at? And he said, oh, just a little town in southeast. And I said, well, what town? And he goes, Wrangell. And I said, you got to be kidding me. Like, nobody's from Wrangell. You know, how are you from there? I'm lived there. And it turns out that Dan was born here the year after my little brother was born here, and they were both delivered by the same doctor. I believe her name was Harriet Shermer.
Sherman.
So my younger brother and him were both born here in Wrangell, both bass players, by the way. My younger brother was a phenomenal bass player. And so Dan had said, if you ever want to go back, I can get us a gig up there, because they always do this 4th of July show. And so in 2011, we ended up flying up here with the band that we were with and played the 4th of July. And then the next year, the guy that led the band, he said he was going to retire. And so at that point, I said, you know, if he's going to retire, there's nothing really more keeping me here. And so my ex-wife at the time moved up here in 2013 with a camper and a trailer full of stuff, and no real idea what was going to happen or if we were going to even stay. And everything just kind of worked out for the better.
What was that band called?
It was the Kelly Hughes Band, was the one that we played with most of the time. They're just a country show band out of the Northwest, and mostly do fairs, rodeos, open for bigger acts, and open for Brad Paisley, George Jones, Merle Haggard. The band has been around for probably close to 40 years, the lead singer Kelly Hughes, and he's been up here several times and established some friendships with some of the people in the community. And but I also played with a lot of other up-and-coming bands. Jeremy McComb was a big band that I played with for a long time. I've also moonlighted with Lost Trailers. I've worked with quite a few up-and-coming artists over the years.
And so you toured a lot. Meaning it was probably not much of a settled, you know, stable life. What was that like?
You know, for the most part, we were weekend warriors most of the time. We'd be out, you know, two or three days at a time. Some days we do longer stints, but it was just very busy because I was also working as an operations manager for an outdoor program my parents owned that we had started in 1993. We worked with troubled young adults and did experiential education. We had a 90-acre organic farm. And so we worked with the students on that place. And it was a kind of a long-term residential program. Up to 2 years they would stay with us.
Was that in Washington?
That was in Washington, up on the north Canadian border on the Columbia River.
Okay.
And so we did that. I would do that off and on. I did a stint logging out of high school. I went to work logging. And so that was something I've always kind of done on the side. Even now I still do timber falling. And, but yeah, the music was just, it wasn't a passion. I don't think I love it, but it wasn't, there was this underlying need to come back to Alaska and see what I could do. You know, they would think that was that probably same spark that my dad had for adventure and wanting to try something new. And, so this is just kind of went on a whim, and I met some really great people that helped me get established. John Yeager was a huge part of me getting into charter fishing up here. And so I did that for 8 years and hung that up, and now I'm in construction. But there's so much more to the story. I mean, there's hours and hours. My mom talks about writing a book at some point in life, which we've encouraged her, but I don't know if it'll be her or one of us kids. I have... five other siblings. So.
Oh, you have five siblings?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. And actually,
this is new information.
Actually, my father unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago, in June 2022. But right after he passed away, my sister sends me a text saying, "You got to give me a call. I think we have a brother, another brother, because I already have two brothers and two sisters." And sure enough, Ancestry.com. My sister was trying to figure out our heritage, and there was somebody on there that shared the same DNA by 22.5%. And lo and behold, I have a older brother who's 51 who runs a fishing charter in Kauai.
Or did.
Now he's in Florida, and he runs a huge yacht down there for a company.
Have you met him?
I have not yet, but he's an extremely nice guy. He has a family and a couple of kids down there.
Oh, and okay. So I know all your names. Well, I don't know all your names, but your name, Tanaya,
yes.
One of your brothers is Joaquin.
Correct.
Another
yeah.
is Mojave.
Mojave is our younger brother. And then there's Aurora, who's our younger sister. And then I have an older sister, Sitka. And I have now a new older brother, who's Lance.
Lance.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't know the origin of Lance's name, do you?
I do not. He was born and raised in Santa Barbara, California,
wow.
though.
But will you speak about the origins of the other sibling and yours, your name?
The origin of our names, mostly Native. I was named after the last Indian chief of the Yosemite Indians, Chief Tanaya. And in Yosemite, there's Tanaya Lodge and Tanaya Lake. And but it's actually, they messed it up on my birth certificate. I was actually supposed to be spelled T-E-N-A-Y-A, but they messed it up and it's spelled T-E-N-I-Y-A is the way I spell it. So. A little different spelling. Mojave was after Mojave Desert. Joaquin was named after San Joaquin Valley. And I believe Joaquin was a native warrior from one of the tribes down there. And then Aurora was from the Aurora Borealis. Sitka was after Sitka Spruce, actually.
I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Sitka Island?
It's Bear Enough Island, but town of Sitka.
Thank
yes.
you.
So, yeah, they were all, Native American for the most part.
Yeah.
So my dad was my grandfather was very into Native culture. And so that passed on to my dad and us kids, too. We just really value the heritage of what, you know, that meant for this land. And just it's miraculous that they lived here for thousands of years, you know, and were able to maintain the beauty and not over harvest. And it was pretty incredible.
Yeah.
So,
didn't your grandpa or his brother write a book?
Yes. I have my grandfather's twin brother actually has written several books, but mostly on the heritage of our family in Santa Barbara. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. Do you have those books?
I have copies of them, yeah.
Okay. Will you speak a little bit about the heritage of your family Santa Barbara?
Yeah, Santa Barbara. My grandfather was Italian, and I guess we're... seven generations in Santa Barbara. My great grandfather was Pio Pico, which was the last governor of California while it was under Mexican rule. And so there's a lot of heritage in that area from the Santa Barbara Mission, and our family was involved. I believe there was Morehouse, which was another name. The Morehouse and Morelli families is where I came from, I think, originally, which they were living there in Santa Barbara when it was established as a mission, I guess, back way back, many generations ago. But our heritage is Italian and Spanish, and then my mom's German, I believe.
Okay. So. Yeah. And an Olympic national park.
Yeah, yeah, that was a little bit of scandal involved there. But, you know, my mom met my dad, and
right.
It was a real mountain man. And I think it worked out for the better. I don't believe that my mom told me later on in life. She's like, I don't think my fiancé, his name was John, was playing on the same team anyways. So
yeah,
it worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe your dad had a fiance and they met?
My dad was actually married, but going through a divorce at the time.
I see. Were they there?
No, I don't believe
no.
so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, what was your family business like then?
You know, we started that business in 1993. My dad was managing a summer camp down in Central Oregon. Well, I guess it wasn't Central. It was more Santa Ana Pass, about 2 hours, I guess, kind of southeast of Portland, up in the Cascades. And he was managing that summer camp. And in the wintertime, they rented it out to a program called TREX, which was an experiential education program out of Bend, Oregon. And they worked with struggling teens, basically. It was privately funded, mostly teens from affluent families that just were kind of failure to launch. They were needing something else. And so the owner of that program was leasing out that facility in the wintertime. We were snowed in every winter, and there was no way in besides snowmobile. And the program had an emergency on one end, and they had to leave the students with my dad for a couple of weeks. And when they came back, they were completely changed, is what the word the therapist said. And he said, told my dad, he said, you know, you're really good at this, working with these kids. What do you think about maybe getting into the business? And I remember sitting around with our family talking about it and going, well, okay, so we're going to start this business. We didn't know how we were going to start it or what we're going to do, because at the time, you know, we didn't have money to make those kind of things happen. But my dad ended up taking a job working at a buffalo ranch up in Northeast Washington. And it had a huge facility because it used to be a dude ranch and had tons of rooms. And we made a deal with the owner that we could utilize the lodging there to start taking in students. At the time, it was 11 to 17. As we got older, we started working with 18 to 25-year-olds. But we would just farm, ranch, you know, expose these kids to a different way of life, some, you know, transferable skills, doing a lot of backpacking, gardening, animal husbandry, just exposing them to a different way of life and giving them some autonomy. And so that went on for 25 years, and that's, I kind of worked in that off and on, but I eventually was the operations manager of that business, and my older brother managed it. And so,
yeah. Have you kept on in contact with any of the people that
yes.
went?
Oh yeah, very much so. We were similar in age with most of them. So we became friends with a lot of these guys, and some of my best friends are still guys out of the out of the program. One of my best friends, Kurt Armstrong, he's a doctor down in Newport Beach, California. And just, it was the perfect time in life. And I think that's why the program was successful, is because we, as kids, we were taking these young men in, but we were young men ourselves. And so we just developed a relationship. And then through those relationships and just being out in the wilderness, and it just exposed them to something different. And it was really successful, and it was a really great time. We worked with over 300 families during those years, and still very close with most all those guys.
That's pretty amazing.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I know that there's quite obviously a lot of wilderness, you know, like similar businesses or whatever, but I've never heard of like continued relationships with those participants.
Yeah. And you spend, you know, minimum time was usually 6 months. Sometimes it was up to 2 years that we were with them. So you really developed friendships. I mean, and we had a built-in band, you know, because some of the students played music. And so we all kind of lived together and ate together, and it was very family oriented. And so, it's a really cool experience, and really changed. I've visited with a lot of these guys over the years and talk about those times. You know, it feels like a lifetime ago already, you know, but it kind of was, you know, 25, 30 years ago, some of this stuff. I've been friends with some of these guys, so it's pretty neat. And then some of these guys actually went off and started their own programs and working with troubled young.
Oh, wow.
Young adults, you know, there's just such a need for it. I think we're so disconnected from nature. You know, there's just a lot of depression and anxiety and, you know, failure to launch. And what are we going to do? You know, it's such uncertain times that there's something about wilderness that just brings everybody back to a even keel, you know.
Yeah. And, and it's not readily available for so many people.
No.
Which is, you know, here in Alaska, that's hard to fathom or whatever.
Yeah.
But. Yeah.
That's I think another part of why I love it here is just being close to nature and you know, having a daughter here growing up at 10 years old, you know, I couldn't have imagined a better place for her to grow up. You know, it's safe, people are wonderful. And they get exposed to things that most people never will, mm-hmm. you know. And so whether you stay here your whole life or you take this experience somewhere else, you know, it really sets the groundwork for a good life, I think, long term.
Yeah. So you did bring some pictures in. Will you just describe a couple? This is from your youth, right?
Yeah. Well, you don't want to go telling stories if you don't have some way to back it up, right?
Exactly. So, yeah. So just describe like a couple. And yeah, I haven't even seen all of them, but
here's pictures. Here's a picture of my dad and a good friend of his.
Okay.
With a bunch of furs they trapped one winter.
Is this, so there's a wooden cabin?
Yeah, it's just a cabin there.
Is that where you all lived?
We didn't have anything that nice. I'll show you a picture of where we lived most of the time.
I'm going to put these on the website too,
okay,
so people can see.
That's fine.
Yeah. And what, I think I see coyotes.
Yeah, there's probably coyotes, marten. Let's see here. Yeah, a lot of marten, fox. In there.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. All right. What else?
Let's see here. Well, I'll show you more. This is more our style there. A wall tent. That's how we lived.
Yeah. It's all canvas.
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty fancy.
And then there is a wood burning stove. I see like a pipe coming out.
Yep. Yep.
Chimney.
Yep. And my dad would pack all this stuff into the mountains. We found a list. One time we went back, it was about, I guess when I was 17, he took us back to one of the cabins that he had built. And these are built just out on Forest Service ground, just trapper cabins. And there was an old map with a list of how much stuff he packed in. And I think it was 707 pounds of gear that he packed in for the winter stay. And we were living in this, you know, for the winter. I mean, totally secluded. I think the nearest road was probably 4 or 5 miles from the trailhead, you know, from where our camp was.
This was in Idaho?
That was in Idaho, yeah.
Okay. And for the, when in your Alaska days early on, was it still, you know, canvas like?
No, but we had a dirt floor.
Wow.
So this is actually, the cabin is still there. Leif Larson has that cabin now, but.
We actually got married there.
Yeah,
oh,
Lindsay and I got married
there?
Down there.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's what it looked like back then. They'd fix it up, put some new shingles on it. But the cabin's still there. It's really cool. I talked to Leif off and on over the years, and he said we could go down there and hang out if we want, but always leave it better than we found it, you know.
Yeah, so I see who this, I assume, is your mom.
Yeah.
With 3 young boys.
Yeah.
2 dogs.
Yeah, we had a passel of dogs down there. It's hard to keep them things apart. So I think at one time there maybe was 20-some puppies.
Oh,
it was, yeah.
Wow. Well, we are about running out of time, one more picture.
There's a pack string.
Oh, there is the cute pups and the donkeys.
And the donkey, the pack string, yeah.
Yeah, this is 1980. And I think your brother, mm-hmm. It says Wolf.
Yep, that's his nickname.
Yep. Yeah. Cool. And your dad.
Yeah.
Wow. Really cool. And it's snowy.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to share about your life or whatever?
Well, you know, there's a million different stories. And it could go on and on and on. But, you know, that was pretty much it. Just a really cool experience. I'm not sure what's next. I'm get through raising my daughter, and then who knows, I might go on an adventure myself. So yeah. We'll see what happens.
Going back to the dirt floors.
Maybe right? So, yeah. After I get done working on my house.
That would be a dream for him.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing with me. I'm happier with nothing than I am
maybe
with everything.
Maybe this will spark some interest in making that book actually happen between all of them.
Maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. Be super cool.
You could all have different chapters.
It would take a group effort to get all the stories straight and how everything happened, but eventually we'll do it.
Really cool. Well, yeah. Thank you so much to the
Absolutely.
Both of you for coming in.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, that was Tanaya and Lindsay Morelli talking about early life in Idaho and parents and Alaska, of course, and Washington. Again, if anyone wants to share a part of their story on Talk on the Rock, please reach out to KSGK. The number again is 874-2345.